that it could reach people who don't have the chance to be in that classroom. And so now we have folks from that classroom also to be able to speak about the experience. It's going to break down the walls even more.
So that's November 9th at Portland's Clinton Street Theater. And you can check out Classroom 4 at classroom4film.com. Professor Rako Hillier, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For KBOO News, I'm Karen James.
I love you, KBOO.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Our goal is to create an atmosphere devoid of genre, a place where quality is key. It's important for the world and future generations to understand the power of art and music. Ultimately, we are doing our part to carry on tradition. Tune into Passing Sound, the first Saturday of each month at 10 p.m. on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM, or KBOO.FM, where we make musical structures for the listener to enjoy.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say.
Good evening and welcome to Trans Positive. Tonight we'll be discussing the topic of asylum for trans people from the U.S. So let's go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Nicolette and I use they, them pronouns.
My name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns.
My name is Sheila and I use she, her pronouns.
Great. So who wants to start? I know there was an article that we were discussing earlier.
Sure, I'd be happy to start. So this article, which is published in Dame Magazine, you can find it online at damemagazine.com, was forwarded to me from a friend of mine, a really known transgender woman who lives out on the East Coast. And you know, she's been sending around to a lot of transgender people she knows because it's really bad right now for the transgender community. And a lot of transgender people are thinking about or have already made moves to leave this country because of fear of persecution and fear of retaliation and fear of incarceration or worse, which is, I think, right up there near the very end of those stages of genocide, Nicolette, that you taught us about at least twice now. So the article is written by Bryn Bryn Tannehill, and it's titled The Case for Transgender Asylum from Trump's America. It was published on September 8th, and I just want to summarize the article, and then we can sort of, we can talk about it. I might read some excerpts from it during the show, but the article argues basically that policies and actions taken by the Trump administration towards transgender people closely parallel early steps of Nazi persecution of Jewish citizens in 1930s Germany. The author claims that transgender students are being pushed out of public education through bathroom bans and threats against school districts. Also that transgender people are being barred from participation in athletics, higher education, and military service, as well as civil service. We have seen very recent, I mean, we actually had Bree Fram on the show, along with two transgender military veterans. Just earlier this year, at the beginning of the year, we had them on the show. And by halfway through the year, all of those people had already been removed from the military. They were labeled as unfit for service, including military service members who had been in for as long as 22 years. Most of these people weren't even serving in like active duty on the front lines. They were in positions like tech and, you know, working in offices, and they are still deemed unfit for military service just because they were transgender. So that's a really good example of that. Also, court rulings have reduced legal protections for people diagnosed with gender dysphoria. Access to health care for transgender people is being increasingly restricted. And employers and institutions are being pressured to remove transgender workers. I will get into that part of the article because I did not know that that was happening. The public presence and online expression by transgender people may soon be criminalized under policies branding gender-related content as pornographic. And we'll get more into depth on that claim because it's one of those claims that requires some backing up if we're actually going to take it seriously. And then finally, proposed actions could include revoking passports. We already know that that's happening because we actually had somebody on the show about 6 months ago, a transgender teenager who had their passport revoked because they were changing their gender marker midway through the very first months of the administration, and they denied their passport change. And if I remember correctly, they also did not give them back their passport. And there were lots of reports about this during the spring. I'm not sure where that's at right now, but I'm going to look into that while we're talking. I'm going to look at that part of the article. They've also proposed banning firearm ownership, which we've seen. We saw, even though there wasn't any connection between, well, I'm not going to mention anybody's names, but there was, you know, just recently in September, there were proposals to prevent transgender people from owning firearms because they were, we did a show about this too, about they're trying to pass a new designation for transgender people that basically labels them as terrorists. And so they wanted to use this label that they just made up for transgender people to then ban them from owning firearms. Amazingly, the people who actually protested against that were actually Second Amendment stalwarts, who are usually on the other side of almost every transgender issue, but they actually spoke out pretty loudly against these proposals coming out of the administration. And then finally, they've been discussing involuntary institutionalization of transgender people, basically labeling them as mental health cases that have to be institutionalized. The author draws a direct point-by-point comparison between these U.S. policies and early Nazi measures that excluded Jews from public life before the Holocaust escalated into mass extermination. So everything that I just talked about in this article is something that's already happened recently here in the United States. And the author is basically saying that this is what happened before the government of Germany actually started taking steps that we really consider seriously genocidal and Holocaust related. You know, things that, I mean, these are just those are just the buildup. I mean, all of those denials of rights we just mentioned are just the buildup. And they argue that these conditions constitute the beginning stages of genocide under international definitions, aiming to eliminate transgender people from society through coercion, fear, and forced detransition. The article concludes with an urgent call for world leaders to offer asylum to transgender people fleeing the United States, which, you know, again, we'll get into this during the show, I think, but, you know, there's a lot of transgender people that have already fled the United States because they're already so terrified at what's going on. And the author asserts that life will become increasingly unlivable for transgender people, and intervention is needed now before it's too late. So that's basically a summary of the article. And so let's talk about that, and I can get more deeply into it. Who would like to go?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for sharing this article, Emma. I mean, this is, I think, something we've already talked about quite a bit, at least in some detail, about, you know, because we've had so many shows talking about the transgenocide that is happening right now. And as is being outlined in this article, in many of the steps that have already been enacted in other genocides, including the Holocaust, including, you know, the genocides that happened in World War II. That's why Gregory Stanton, you know, wrote this whole 10-step guide to a genocide. And we've seen almost all the steps leading up to a genocide happening to trans people right here in the United States, as well as worldwide. And among, you know, the essentially prescribed preventions for genocide that are listed in this outline as well. You know, we see frequently offering asylum to the targeted population, people who are fleeing the country, as well as arming the target population, making sure the target group has a way to defend themselves, which of course, I think that's why the discussion of banning trans people from owning firearms was so alarming, because they want us to not have a way to defend ourselves. That's part of the genocide plan. So I definitely see where the author of this article is coming from, because we are seeing this genocide that is very, very parallel to other genocides happening right now, and that's why steps need to be taken right now in order to prevent the mass killings that are probably inevitable at this point.
Thank you. Sheila, do you have anything to say about that?
Yes, I do, from a historical perspective for our community. For those that have grown up and lived under the era of more permissive and available transgender services, this sounds very shocking. For those that remember Stonewall in 1969, it's not shocking at all, because the standard of behavior then was you could not be on the street in a cross-gendered appearance without proving through 3 articles of clothing that you were somehow identifiable to someone searching avidly to make sure that they were not sleeping with the wrong sex, that you had at least 3 warning signs that you were essentially sexual poison, and so that you were not soliciting under false pretenses, and you weren't endeavoring to do some other fraud upon some unwitting person. But remember, we were living in a strictly gender-enforced society. So now what you're seeing is an effort to try to get us back to a completely segregated society. And the problem, of course, is the danger of false positives. Certain people that are gender fluid, whether by design or just simply by what nature gave them, are going to be called transgender. And so it's a paradox. When we were coming out, our fundamental difficulty was proving that our feelings were not simply an illusion. So we had to think of things and develop a terminology to define what transgender even was, what was the difference between someone who was transsexual versus a mere crossdresser. We had all these different ways of then getting the psychological community to recognize us was our pathway to gender affirmation through hormones and through surgery. If we weren't recognized, if we didn't have some definition in a wider community of medical professionals, we couldn't get what we wanted. So now it's working in the opposite direction. Is they're saying, we're going to start chopping away your rights by penalizing the doctors for even treating you, penalize the hospitals and the insurers for aiding you in your transition, penalize the mere discussion of your existence. And so what they're trying to do is make us invisible again. So here's the secret. We've been invisible always because those that don't recognize us or the validity of our feelings basically look at us and say, well, you're deluded, period. And as long as you remain deluded, we're going to find ways to discriminate against you. So here's the interesting thing, though. There's a double-edged sword of invisibility. When you're completely invisible, no one can find you. So here's the paradox. We have to think strategically like the people did at Stonewall. We have to find a way to make invisibility work for us. So let's just look at some examples. Don't interface with the police under any circumstances. Whenever you're dealing with the police, whether it's a traffic stop or anything like that, whenever you're going to a border checkpoint, whenever you're going to a red state where you're more likely to be identified and tagged and read or clocked, as we say, those are the times when you're likely to run into problems. So what is the smart thing to do? Be in a state that doesn't care whether you're trans or not. Be in a blue state. That's one of the first things to do. The second thing, don't interface with the police. If you're expressing your rights, don't be in the front line. Don't be the one that gets arrested and thrown into jail. Anytime you're dealing with people that don't accept you, you're in trouble. So try to avoid that. Second thing is, if your life is working at all, you have some advocates, whether it's your boss or your friends or your community, people have known you, they've accepted you, you're part of something, they're going to notice if suddenly you're scooped off the street or something. They're going to protest. They're going to be upset about that. So it's a very good time to not be alone. It's a good time to try to join organizations. It's a good idea to go out in groups so that you're not it's harder to molest a group than to go after just an individual. But invisibility is the key. And the other great comfort we have right now is that Trump has thrown such a wide net. He's doing so many things at the same time. The universities are not safe. They don't get to put there. They want to adjust the curriculum choices. They want to choose who the faculty members are. They want to be able to blow up boats out in the middle of the ocean without proving that there's drugs aboard. All these different things are going on at the same time. We're only 0.5% of the population, 0.5%. That's still several million people, but it's still not something where we're in the front line. There's so many people he's going after right now, and there's only so many hours in the day, and we need to make that work for us. It also helps to look at the LGBT, the larger spectrum, and rely upon the gay and lesbian community to stand by the little T at the end. We're the little tiny trailing wisp at the end of that group. So it's very important that we have more solidarity with our brothers and sisters than we've ever had before, because they already went through the AIDS crisis, and we've been there before, where we've been invisible, and so they let us die of AIDS. They didn't care. So let's look at the strength of the past, bring back those skills, and those will help us now.
Thanks. Great. Do you have anything to say about that, Nicolette? So Sheila, I just wanted to respond to what you were saying. There were some really great points there. So first of all, I just wanted to mention, when you were discussing about the issue of going after doctors, for just a minute here, I want to discuss the case of Dr. Mei Lau, who announced that they're going to be moving to Oregon. Dr. Mei Lau is an adolescent medicine specialist who was practicing medicine in Texas. And in October of 2024, the Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, who is one of these people who's really been going after transgender healthcare providers in the state of Texas, filed a suit against Dr. Lau, alleging that she provided gender-affirming medical care to minors in Texas. On or about October 2025, Dr. Lau gave up her Texas medical license and publicly said that she has decided to practice in Oregon and therefore has seen no reason to maintain her license. The legal suit alleges that she treated 21 people who were seeking medical care as transgender people. While Dr. Lau states that she's moving to Oregon, there is this lawsuit. It's an aggressive enforcement by the state of Texas on its ban on gender-affirming care for minors. So it's an example of it's an example of what the state of Texas is doing to try to it's the same way that they've been going after doctors, you know, doctors who provide reproductive health care. I mean, the next step in Texas is going to be to go after pregnant women who have who miscarry, and there's actually been a lot of examples of that already. Moving to Oregon is a strategic relocation for Dr. Lau, because here in Oregon, we have laws that support access to gender-affirming care. So this is just one small example, Sheila, of what you were talking about regarding how, they've been going after people who provide medically affirming care. The thing is that regardless of whether you get affirming medical care or not, it's not going to change the fact that you're transgender. I mean, if you can't get the affirming medical care from a doctor in Texas, then you'll go across the border to Mexico to get it, or you'll go to Canada, or you'll go overseas, or you'll get it on the black market, or you'll do gender expressiveness. I mean, transgender people are incredibly creative, and we're going to find all kinds of ways to express our gender. And a lot of transgender people don't choose to seek medical care because they're transgender. And a lot of non-binary people don't choose to get medical care for being non-binary. And this tidal wave of gender expressiveness that's blossomed in this country isn't going to be snuffed out by the Texas Attorney General or by some creepy Department of Justice issuing rulings, issuing executive orders supporting executive orders from the executive branch that are clearly unconstitutional. Over the long course of our history as a country, almost everything that's come out of the White House as an executive order as it relates to gender identity is going to clearly be proven to be illegal, unconstitutional, discriminatory, prejudicial, and fundamentally harmful to the well-being of United States citizens and of anyone who lives in this country. You know, just because there's a bully in the White House right now who's saying terrible things doesn't mean that they're right. There's so many examples in history of people who were completely wrong. Everything that they did was wrong and it was terrible. And, you know, the party in hand at that time or the government or corporations didn't have the moral courage to condemn it. But everybody in the world saw that it was wrong and they knew it was terrible. And time proved it. History proved it. And this moment will be corrected probably in a very short time. This moment will be corrected. So don't lose hope. I do want to go into discussion about a few of the claims in the article, because I think since this is journalism, it's important to be balanced and to think more deeply about some of the claims, because there are some things where, and this might be a good place to have a discussion too. So one of the claims is that this compares this moment to genocide. And making a claim of genocide is a very high bar. I mean, I can tell you that as a Jew, it's really hard, even when I'm talking to other Jews, even when I'm talking to liberal Jews in the United States, to convince them that what is clearly a genocide in Gaza. I mean, if you want to talk about genocide, here's what happened in Gaza. 2 million people got forcibly relocated from their homes while they were being bombed, while snipers were shooting children in the head, while IDF soldiers were gunning down medical service providers in hospitals, while the Israeli army was bombing hospitals, while the Israeli army was shooting civilians trying to get food aid, while people were being buried to death in collapsed buildings. These are civilians who didn't have anything to do with Hamas or any actions against the Israeli government. Israel has killed tens of thousands of civilians, including women and children and elderly people. They've destroyed mosques. They've destroyed, housing. They've destroyed hospitals. There's a genocide. And then they intentionally starved the people of Gaza. They've been intentional. I mean, they've gone through phases of intentionally starving the people of Gaza and cutting off all food aid to them. And they have no access to food. That is genocide. That is genocide. What's happening right now, I mean, what's happening right now to transgender people is very concerning. But genocide, that word really means something. You know, the Holocaust, that was genocide. Now, what's happening to transgender people is really bad. It's really bad, and it could be a genocide. It could definitely go that way. But it's not a genocide right now. And we shouldn't get too caught up in this idea that we're being genocided when we look at what a genocide really means. I mean, when you look at Rwanda, where 800,000 Rwandans were killed in like 3 days, you know, with machetes. I mean, that's a genocide. What's happening to us right now is terrible. And it's awful, and we should condemn it, and we should condemn every part of it. But making a claim of genocide requires a high bar. And so I want to mention that, not to be dismissive of the article or anything that we've said, because everything that we said is very important. And we talk about how genocide comes in stages and how governments take a certain set of actions against a people leading up to genocide. And we could be there in the future, but we may not be. And it is important to say what a genocide, I mean, what's been happening to the Palestinians is a long time in the coming. It started in 1948 with the Nakba, and it's been going on for 75 years. And right now it's culminating. So, you know, we may very well be in the early stages of a genocide for the transgender people. What do you all think about that?
So as we've if I can just say what I was going to say real quick. As we have discussed in other episodes of this show, Gregory Stanton, when he wrote his outline of the 10 stages that lead up to a genocide, and we went over things that trans people are experiencing right now. We are already on stage 8. Stages 9 and 10 could very well be coming if we don't take action now to prevent those steps from happening. And so that's why I do think it's important to take these claims of genocide seriously, because history shows that the things that are happening to trans people right now are the same things that happened in the past that led to other genocides. And that does need to be taken very seriously. So I just wanted to bring that up first, but you can go ahead, Sheila, with what you were going to say.
I can affirm with what both of you have said so far, because there are true, there are stages, and you don't get to tyranny overnight. Although look at the pace that Trump is doing these things. And it's because, according to the rules, he's got 4 years. You can't run a third time, but I'm one of the people that's convinced that he's not going to leave willingly. He will either prevent an election, he will claim it was stolen again, he will find some way to install himself the same way that Putin has, as a more permanent figure in our political life. And so that's going to bring a lot of reprisals for people that are a lot more numerous and a lot more powerful than we are. It's not easy to maintain a delusory view of the world and then sell an entire country on it at a time when we have the internet, when we're international, when the rest of the world is watching us. Eventually, some of this is going to percolate through the news media and everything else, and his numbers of approval are dropping. So what we have to remember is that in dark times, sometimes you have to wait things out. You have to last. And that means being adaptable, and it means making necessary sacrifices to prevent yourself from running risks that you don't need to run. So there's times when it's important to kind of, dig your heels in, or your high heels in if you're a drag queen like me, and you just say, well, I'm just going to hold my line on every little thing. If someone uses the wrong pronouns, I'm going to get upset. I'm going to call everybody on everything every day. But this may be a time when recognizing that when we do that, we victimize ourselves. We make ourselves a target. Enforced good manners is not really good manners. Forcing someone to say what we would like to hear isn't going to make them different. And all they're going to do is just internalize the hatred and resentment. So my thought is we have to be a little bit less desirous to have everything our way for a while. One of the dangers of getting a lot of rights too quickly is that after a while you take them for granted. Having a guy like Trump throws us back to our origins and makes us say, you know what, everything is a privilege. Everything is a good grace if you manage to get through the day and you don't get assaulted, you don't get mugged, you don't get horrible slurs thrown in your direction. All of the things that, as an older trans person, I went through when I came out, and I came out in a fairly privileged environment, and it didn't save me, and it taught me a lot right off the bat. And now that doesn't happen anymore, and I don't know why. I don't know whether it's just that I'm more convincing now, or whether people don't care as much about older people, they don't clock them as easily. It's hard to say, but I do remember what that was like and how painful it was, and how much, how in front of my face it was. They would claim that malls were private property, and then no cross-dressed person would be allowed in the malls. That was the way things were. Imagine that. You couldn't go shopping. So to learn to ask our, here's where we run into problems, I think. The more we do to affirm our gender, especially through surgical means, the harder it is to hide those things. It's very hard to return to studied ambiguity. But there's always a way. There's always a way, and we can learn from the trans people coming from the other side of the equation. How do they bind their breasts? What do they have to do in order to sometimes pass at work? How do you hide your early stages of hormones? There's all kinds of techniques that people used to do to get by, to not get fired, to not run into conflict with the law. And we need to relearn those skills at a time and make ambiguity work for us instead of against us. We have to be like a chameleon. We adapt to the environment around us. When it's permissive, we bask on rocks in the sun. When it's coming down on top of us like a load of bricks, we learn how to get away from the avalanche. Those skills may be necessary for the next couple of years.
So it's really interesting you said that, Sheila. I want to read a paragraph from this article. And, you know, I want to say that, this article, the reason that I'm sharing it is because it's circulating in the community and people are responding to it and it's circulating. So, I mean, people are concerned. I mean, I think it reflects people's real concerns. And my own personal feeling about the article is it's like, when you wake up and you've just had a really bad day and you just think, you know, oh, the worst possible thing is going to happen to me, or the worst thing. It's like when you just, it's that moment when you just completely give in to your fears, you know, when you're so overwhelmed and overcome by your fears that you just, the worst thing that you can imagine, that's what you think about. And to me, that's kind of what this article feels like. And it's certainly true that, you know, for some people in America, the worst possible thing is going to happen to them. I mean, that's why on November 20th, we get together at First United Methodist Church every year, and we have Transgender Day of Remembrance, because for those people who were killed in the last year for being transgender, the very worst possible thing did happen to them. And we acknowledge that that's very real. So I just want to read you one article, one paragraph, and because it goes directly to what you were saying, Sheila. And it's kind of near the end of this article. This article is, again, this is by Dame, or no, this is in Dame, Dame News. And it's, let me see, what is it? I'll tell you what, I'll give you the title after I read the article, because then I'll lose my place. So here's what the paragraph says. The paragraph says, and this goes back to your thing about being a chameleon, Sheila. It says, the only way to survive as a transgender person in the U.S. is to cease being transgender. For those who have made a partial medical transition, their best hope of a meaningful life is to detransition, renounce their gender identity, and try to return to living in your assigned sex at birth. Those who have fully transitioned medically likely won't be able or won't be allowed to return to living in their sex assigned at birth. Either way, the administration is clearly committed to causing serious bodily or mental harm and making conditions unlivable for transgender people, all calculated to destroy a community and erase them from history. If there are no transgender people left in the U.S., because they have fled, gone into hiding, been locked up in mental institutions, this represents the physical destruction of a clearly defined sexual minority and constitutes genocide. And again, this is from the article, The Case for Transgender Asylum from Trump's America. And the author, Bryn Danahill, is making a very bold claim that transgender people need to take action now to flee this country because they face imminent genocide. And so every paragraph of the article is very emphatic. I mean, it's emphatic. It's like you're ringing the alarm bells from the top of a ship. You're saying the ship is going down. You've got to jump in a lifeboat now and save yourself. So what do you think about that, Sheila? What do you think about that, Nicolette?
So I do want to hit that
really hard. Yeah, but go ahead, Nicolette. I've got some thoughts on that, but go on.
Yeah, no, I've got quite a few thoughts. So, you know, I know that from my perspective, like, I haven't undergone a whole lot of medical transition, nothing that's really visible. And I have the privilege of being able to pass as cisgender if I need to. And I acknowledge that. And I've, with everything that's been happening lately, I've considered, well, what if I were to just go back in the closet and pretend to be cis, so I can avoid all this potential danger? But of course, the problem with that is I'll never stop being trans. I would just be living a lie, and I would just be miserable because I would have no way to affirm the gender that I really am. And, you know, I see all these transphobes talk about, well, the real treatment for trans people needs to be, you know, basically give them therapy to make them not trans anymore. They're talking about conversion therapy, which has already been tried over and over for decades. Every single study shows that it never works. You cannot make a trans person stop being trans because it's just the way that our brains are wired. And so it kind of makes me wonder, well, what's the inevitability if transphobes are so determined to make trans people stop existing? If they can't make us not be trans, then the alternative, of course, they won't admit to it, or at least most of them won't, some of them will, is just to end our lives. And for some trans people, it may come to them ending their own lives if they are forced to be in the closet, if they are forced to detransition, let alone just how badly we're being treated by society, whether we're out or not. So I do think it's understandable that many trans people may feel the need to flee the country right now. And I'm not saying that, you know, maybe we all necessarily do need to flee, but I can understand why many people would feel the need to. Anyway, go ahead, Sheila.
Okay, a couple thoughts here. I'm afraid that for most of us, our lives are fairly tangential as it is. If we're lucky enough to have work and we have a place to live and we have family and friends nearby, to try to flee to a foreign country is going to be beyond our means. So that means if we're stuck here, we have to find a way to survive here. It's going to be harder on the young people because when you're coming up, you're trying to define yourself as a human being in adolescence. And there's so many sexual rites of passage that go along with being adolescent. And there's so much judgmentalness and competition around sexual issues. When you're in high school, it's really a tough time. So the important thing, and there isn't the background of having gone through similar terrible times and survived them, but I want to stress, I lost a friend to suicide this year. I'm a way anti-suicide person. Never be your own worst enemy by taking yourself out of this life. You have a right to every year of your life as long as God lets you live. So don't ever be amongst those that join in with the enemy that wants us dead and aid them to achieve their end. Fight it every way you can. That's my first thought. The second thing is that although in the article it says that the rational basis versus strict scrutiny, these are standards of constitutional review, are a lot easier to best just a rational basis, which means it has to be at least not completely wacko. But of course, most of the things this administration is doing are completely wacko. So even in the rational basis test, a lot of these rules are completely unworkable, or they would demand that doctors violate their obligations to retain their license, which is to maintain confidentiality. Medical records are not there to be grabbed by every governmental agency. So it isn't going to be easy to get all this data that the government just presumes they're going to get on all of us. So the key thing to do, don't tell the whole world, you know, on social media or any other way, everything about yourself. It's time to, as I said, work on invisibility, work on localism, learn where your safe places are, learn what behaviors are safe for you and what are not, learn the times of day and situations where you're at risk, avoid periods of confrontation with people that you know off the bat are going to hate you to begin with, if you're ever clocked and discovered. There's so many survival skills that when we're going through this ecstatic feeling of being affirmed in our chosen or birth or not birth, but our affirmed gender of who we are, what happens is that we are kind of drunk on success, and then we want to push the envelope and we want universal acceptance in every circumstance. Sometimes that's how we get into trouble. Understand that the drag moms in the old days would say, honey, you're not ready to walk into this bar, and you're not ready to walk the streets in that outfit. There's a lot of wisdom in the old community. It's so important that we work on that. So think about that, but always remember our first duty of care is to ourselves, and is the first duty of care is to stay alive and not to be overly panicky or depressed over all this, even though it is discouraging. Remember, he's going after everybody for something. He's bitten off way more than one president has ever tried to do in his lifetime. A lot of things are going to fail, and we're an example of that. I think he's going to have a hard time coming after us because we can blend pretty quickly. There's only 0.5% of us. We're like the spotted owl. We're out in the woods somewhere. He can't find us.
So I just like to close my part of the show by basically talking about why this could actually be the end of an old order of patriarchy and homophobia and transphobia. You know, there's a strong case to be made that the current political backlash against transgender rights represents the final defensive surge of an old worldview. And it's one that sense that it's very quickly losing its cultural importance. For one thing, social attitudes are shifting, and they're not shifting in a direction against transgender people. Surveys over time show rising public awareness and acceptance of transgender people, especially among younger generations. Even where the policy is hostile today, the cultural baseline is moving towards inclusion. The opposition knows this, and it really scares them. Also, moral panics peak just before they collapse. So again, I'm going to say that one more time just to be really clear. Moral panics peak just before they collapse. Here's some examples from history. Gay rights. There was the AIDS era panic, the Family Values Crusades. And what was the outcome of that? There was public acceptance and marriage equality. What about the movement for women's rights? What about feminism? There were traditional women's movements and trying workplace resentment. But then what happened after that in the 70s? Women entered the workforce and also leadership roles. At the Civil Rights Movement. The Civil Rights Movement, which happened in the 1960s, represented the culmination of 100 years of efforts to fight Jim Crow. And the Civil Rights Movement was at the peak, and it created this incredible segregationist violence in the South. I mean, everyone in the 1960s saw this on television. They saw, you know, school children being hosed with high pressure hoses, and churches being firebombed, children being murdered, civil rights workers from the North being murdered. And then what happened after that? There was federal civil rights enforcement. So This is just an example. When entrenched power groups feel threatened, they escalate, and their escalation is a sign of their weakness. It's an incredible sign of their weakness, and we should all be remembering that. We should, like, you know, put that on every bumper sticker. You know, an escalation by a bully is a sign of weakness. Also, anti-trans policies are increasingly out of step with mainstream institutions. Major employers support transgender employees. Medical establishments overwhelmingly recognize gender-affirming care as legitimate. And many organizations and institutions across the United States recognize the need for inclusion and have taken concrete steps over the last 20 years more and more to show inclusiveness. Courts are also showing divergence across states, which slows down national regressions. The demographics favor the future. Most of the loudest voices against transgender people are very old. They're mostly religious conservative, and they live in shrinking rural areas. They live in those big, open, empty Western, Southern, Midwestern states where nobody lives, but apparently the cows have as many votes as some of us do living in the more crowded, densely packed coastal states and of both the West and East Coast. So younger, urban, internet native populations overwhelmingly support trans rights at much higher rates, and power will shift as that generation ages, even when the current moment feels overwhelmingly. Also, restrictive regions may accelerate their own decline, as we just saw with that case in Texas just a minute ago. States that ban gender-affirming care are already seeing doctors relocating, talent and youth leaving, and difficulty recruiting businesses. I mean, these states are losing, and we've seen the same thing happen with reproductive health care. There's becoming gynecological deserts in America where, like, women can't get medical care, and that affects pregnant women who want to have birth, as well as pregnant people who want to choose reproductive care and terminate a pregnancy. Finally, once somebody knows someone who's trans, this fear-based narrative collapses. As we become visible and we become more normal and people get to know us, then this sense of that we're the other begins to slowly disappear. And so what you have right now is you have this moral panic. It's peaking with the current administration, and it's all based on this incredible weakness. I mean, they have an incredibly weak moral argument. It's very unpopular. And the only thing that they have to show for it is this moment. You know, they're just showing the ugliness and the, you know, the ugliness and the untruthfulness of their claims, like, through everything that they do. So I think there's a lot of cause for hope.
Well, thank you, Emma. And I do like that we're ending this show on a more hopeful and positive note, because no matter how bad things are looking right now, and no matter how bad they could get, we do need to hold out that hope that there is going to be a resolution to this. There will be some sort of a happy ending, per se, for us.
Well, you've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. And again, I hope that you will join us. We'll be doing a special radio show for Transgender Day of Remembrance, which happens on November 20th. And if you'd like to join us, we do have a vigil happening at First United Methodist Church over in Goose Hollow on November 20th. We're going to be remembering those who have passed in the last year.
Thank you, Emma, and thank you, everyone else. Have a good night.
I'm everyone else.
transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive, Tara KBOO. At KBOO, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KBOO want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KBOO supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio.
Bedroom surprise.
tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1970.